Today is March 21st, 1985. My name is Tika Ward. I'm interviewing Ed Jungbert, Jr. We are at 2141 Southside Drive, Louisville, Kentucky, location of the Jungbert Corporation. Our topic is Lou Tate and the Little Loom House. I want you to tell me some more about when your daughter first went up there.
Well,
all walked by there.
Yeah, but as my daughter grew up, she'd always go with Miss Tate's. But as my daughter got older and Miss Tate got older, they were both strong-willed people. And Laurie was very, very good at weaving. She'd go up, and Miss Tate had a group of young kids. She'd ask Laurie to come up after school and help her teach it. And she loved it. But Miss Tate was, if she felt bad, she'd jump on Laurie pretty good, and Laurie'd jump on her. And she'd come back home. She said, "Daddy, I'm never going back up Miss Tate's again." Well, that lasted about a week or so, and Miss Tate'd call her. Laurie'd go up there because she'd feel like she'd be missing something. They'd get back together again. But Laurie, she's very talented. It's just something that, in fact, she is in Murray State now, and she had to take a weaving class because of her major, and it's worked out good because her teacher thinks that Miss Tate's the greatest thing that ever happened to the industry, and here Laurie grew up beside her. It's just a neat situation. In fact, Miss Tate had no clothes. You know, she had that one damn apron she wore for 50 years, and that's what we get her for Christmas, something to wear, or a new bottle of wine.
Do you think that her not letting the other people get involved, the banker, the lawyer, and you, was she protecting her privacy?
Yes, she was protecting. She never wanted to let go. She lived like a hermit, and everything was close. We had no idea how much money she had. We didn't know if she had enough money to eat. I don't know if she was on food stamps. I don't know anything. We could never find out. She would never, ever let anybody close to her. And, what can you do on something like that?
We have a picture here of the, it's a 1972 spider page, but your name is mentioned on it. That was before Ed Jungbert began having the parking area enlarged. Tell us some more about that.
Well, we live on a hill that's always been a problem in Louisville. It's Kenwood Hill. And we've had a lot of wash. There was a road behind Mrs. Tate's cabin and the top house, and the road kept inching over on her property and started moving the cabin. And she fought City Hall for God knows how many years. But we had to divert the water to get it away from her place. So we started building over the years, a new parking lot and expanding it and getting the water farther away from her house. We had to open up ditches where the mud had washed in. And finally I don't know which mayor did it, but somebody built a new road up there and blocked it off, and it's got everything pretty well stable now. But even brand new houses on the hill have slid, some of them 2 or 3 foot. And the cabins have withstood it because they'll give with it a little bit. But they're all getting old and basically I think they're rotten. I've always had the opinion that, what's the name of the society in Louisville that takes care of Folsom Club? I think that the Folsom Club or our museum that we have downtown should take all of this stuff and display it properly and have a room for it. And the way they can make money is to sell that property and abandon it. Rather than putting more money in it, because it looks nice and it's beautiful. The weavers to weave in the trees with the Easter lilies out and in the fall and stuff. But I don't think the houses are controlled humidity wise and to keep those patterns. And there's a lot of stuff. I imagine when you start really digging into that, you will find a lot more things that she's got hidden, because she hid everything. She'd stick it in corners and behind walls, and she knew where it was. I never did understand weaving. I don't understand the big patterns, but I understand why I went to the Smithsonian. Somebody up there knew her. You know, Miss Tate was known everywhere, and she evidently knew her business and was the originator of a lot of this stuff. But I'm not mostly interested. My basic interest started as a neighbor.
That's what I was going to say. When you first walked by that time, then you were aware of how the neighboring people felt about her and the people in the community.
Well, there's only two or three people in the neighborhood that would really talk to her. She wasn't friendly with most of them. She minded her own business. And when she had people up there, they'd park cars all over their yards and everything, and it irritated a lot of people. You had to really know her and forget about all that stuff. But an interesting thing, I was born right here where we were, and my dad and my sisters and I would walk straight up that hill. There was nobody there at all. And we ventured away a little many, many years ago and walked way over the hill and got lost. And we ended up at Miss Tate's house, and she told us that, and I never will forget this, if we stayed up for too long, the Indians would get us. And she called my dad, and Dad came up and got us. So we went from there to there and got lost. I mean, this was wilderness. Now, we're talking 40 years ago.
So you remember seeing her when you were a little...
Oh, yeah. But I didn't know her until I moved up there.
What was your first impression of her?
Back then, I was glad to see somebody. You know, but you know, I admired the lady for what she knew and what she tried to do. You know, I had no interest in weaving. To me, that's the last thing that I would ever do. You know, but I think that there's place for everybody in this world.
Do you think it was a combination of houses being built and growing up, and her getting older, that caused her to be, as you said, grouchy?
I think so, and I don't think she never took care of herself. You know, she was she'd take care of everybody else before she'd take care of herself. And I really don't think she's felt good for many, many years.
Now, tell again about taking the, she would call you up and want you to take a little loom somewhere.
Well, she'd call up, she'd go to all the schools, and she'd call up and she'd say, Ed, I need Laurie this afternoon, and I need you to pick up the loom and take it to either Goss or Auburndale or Kenwood or one of the schools. And I'd say that you can pick me up about 6:30, 7 o'clock. Well, we would do it. You know, we'd do whatever she wanted done because she was a nice person. And we did that for years. We did it for years.
And then you had her to your house at Christmas?
Had her at my house at Christmas, but I had to go get her. And actually, haul her up there. She wouldn't go. But then once she got up there, she had a good time.
Do you think that if we sold the place up there, I mean, this is a controversial idea. Don't you think it is? I mean, I think it's hard for people to let go.
Well, I don't see why it's hard for people to let go, because who's got a hold of it? I mean, who's really got a hold of the place? Is there some organization that you know?
Well, you know, your name came up at our last board meeting, and we take the board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is an important part, the Lou Tate Foundation Incorporated owns the premises. And I think that you think they're beating a dead horse.
I do. As I say, that's one person's opinion. And I'm looking at it, number one, I'm in a lot of voluntary groups. I'm in Alliance Club and, you know, Kentucky Derby Festival. And everybody wants to be there on the Sunday for the big show. But it's hard to find them on Saturday or Friday to get ready and find them on a Monday to help clean up. I don't really know how much, we think everybody should be interested in that, but how much interest really is there? I think you get more masses of people if it had a nice display somewhere, someplace that this stuff could be protected. I don't know the value of it. As I say, I don't know anything about it. But I think it should be somewhere where all you have to do is have one kook go up on the top road or low road and drop a match, and everything that everybody's worked for is gone, because there is no way that anybody could save it.
Do you think we should try to open up, do you think we should take some of the money that the foundation would get and have another place where we did our weaving and people taught weaving? Or
I don't think that you should ever invest in property, because I think there should be a place in the museum or you know, you got Speed. I don't know. I've never been in Speed Museum in my life, but my wife takes her kids there. Or someplace in U of L, or there should be someplace where you could get space that everybody could see, and the money that would be taken from selling that property, put and invested, and use that to further their education, to keep it progressing.
I see. So that the people who, where the money would go, would be to the people who were teaching the weaving, for instance.
Well, if they got paid for it, but it would also help maintain a place or a certain portion of a place to keep the patterns and keep all the stuff. In other words, I don't think if the place was sold, I don't think that the money should be put back in another piece of property. I think the money should be invested and used as use the interest for whatever came out. You know, that would be your budget, and use that money to perpetuate this down the line. But see, people, I talk to people that they came out and they're bringing their children. They want their children to see it. But you're off the beaten path. There's no way to park up there. You know, you can what, 5 or 6 cars? I sent a plumber there yesterday and he had to pack everything up top. You can't drive up there. You can put a ton of rock on it, or 10 tons or 20 tons of rock, and it's not going to stay there. So I don't know. I'm just of the opinion that the stuff, if it's as valuable as people says it is, should be moved.
Mm-hmm. Next week, or 2 weeks from now, we're going to have another board meeting, and we're going to be discussing just this topic.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm probably the first one that mentioned it.
You are the first person, and Sally, and it made Sally Moss start thinking, because we worry about the 3 houses all the time.
Have you looked at them?
Of course.
Do you think they burn easy?
I never even thought of it.
Well, those garage doors where she kept her car underneath the house, in the front house, you can take a knife and just stick right through it. It's rotten. I have never been up there since they remodeled the top house. I've never seen it. I disagreed with it. And I didn't, you know, I tried once and I figured that's all I could do. So I stayed out of it. I wasn't even interested in doing anything on it. But I told Sally, and what's the other gal that was out here?
Well, you talked with Lynn Renault on the telephone.
Well, Lynn, I've known Lynn through the lines, but I would be glad to do anything we can do, you know, as far as maintaining it within reason. She brought us a key to all 3 of the places, and as I say, there's still a leak in the bottom house, but I don't know if y'all even use it anymore at all.
No.
Jesus.
We had a caretaker living there for a while.
I never saw him or him.
No, he didn't do much. And we're getting ready for our open house, April 14th.
See, everybody that's involved in that is so busy. Do they have time? Yeah, that's just one little part of your life, you know. When I tried to get the different communities, different civic organizations in this area, we would have the president of each one of the organizations to serve on the board, and they would rotate after they got a new president. But my theory on that was that we'd have a big manpower pool, which would be as many as 500 people or even more, and each one of the clubs could take a month to do this, or, you know, we have to do so much civic work, like in my lines is we work with the Eye Foundation, but we have to do so much civic work, and they say today is the Lions Club day to go up there and do whatever they want to do, and next week is the Optimists, and the next month is somebody else, or the Beachmont Women's Club or the Beachmont Garden Club could decorate the place, and it would be a community effort. I wanted to do it while she was alive, so we knew what we were doing. You know, she knew it, and when she died, it went with her, except for the stuff she left. I don't know if she kept a diary or not. I really don't. But it was a shame, you know, she just basically faded away.
And you wish that you all could go up there and she could show you the weeding, she could show you what was going on?
Yeah, in other words, then that would build up the interest in the different organizations, because, you know, we all, just like we have the Fireman's Day at the schools, I have goats here. I take my goats to the schools, or they come over and get them for show and tell. And it's all part of it. It's part of it. A lot of kids nowadays don't get to see all of that stuff. But it's funny that my daughter grew up next to weaving, then go to Murray, and I end up paying for it. But it's an important part, and I think as I say, I don't know that much about it, but I think it's coming back in decorating. A lot of people, she's taken some course in planning. What the name of it is? All I do is send money, but she has to make something for decorations, and so I think it's coming back now.
When you would go up there in the old days, you said that you would sit near the park benches.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just sit there and talk. Well, you know about everything.
Did you go to some of the open houses and you would see the people there, or you would just go up there on?
No, most of the time nobody was here. A lot of those people, I had nothing in common with at all. They're just a different group of people than I was with. But there was a lot of nice people. But no, I didn't know. I'd go up to some open houses too. I furnished the cooler for the lemonade and this kind of stuff a lot of times. Whatever Luke Tatum wanted, we gave it. No question.
Did your daughter exhibit, would she go to the schools and do the weaving and show
young
people?
Oh yeah. Did it for years. In fact, Mrs. Tate was very, very sharp in a sense. My daughter called my wife and she said, Mrs. Embert, your daughter, there's something wrong with her. She can hardly walk up this hill. And so we didn't know what she was talking about. She's a very active girl. She said, there's something wrong with her legs. So we took her to our doctor, and our doctor said, yep, I think she's got a problem. We took her to Dr. Lynn, and she had juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. But Mrs. Tate was the first one to notice it. Isn't that something? She's the first one to notice. She knew that there was something wrong with that girl's legs. And our doctor, I thought, was pretty sharp to diagnose what it was. And then Dr. Frank Lynn, the arthritic. And so I had to fix her a whirlpool bath. She took a 20-minute whirlpool bath every night for 10 years. And she's worked out of it. But we were lucky. We got it many, many years ago. But that's because she used to walk down there and walk up the hill, and the state thought that she was too young to be having that trouble. That's something.
Yes.
Miss Tate called several times, and as I walked by, she talked to me. She said, Eddie, we need to get the community involved. And she was the one that spearheaded she liked me and she respected me. And she kept telling me, she said, we need to get the community involved in this thing. Miss Tate would call and see me as I walk up down the street, or stop me, or I'd pick her up from going to the convenience, take her home. And she said, Eddie, I need somebody. We need to get the community involved. How can we get the community involved? And this is what spearheaded all of this. It was her idea. She wanted to, but yet she never would, But she definitely wanted, and she was very disappointed at a lot of people. Now I'd have to listen to that, and I listened to it from my grandmother. All older people, I guess, are like that. But, nothing works out the way they want it to work out. But you know what interests her might not interest everybody else. But Miss Tate was the mover. And that's the reason I came up with the idea with Mrs. Shingle that if we had, we could cover a bigger territory with all the presidents of these clubs to sit on the board. That was it. She wanted it done, but yet she didn't want to let go.
Because once she would get other people involved.
Too many people know her business. She was a hermit. She stayed in that house, and no telling what she had put away there at all.
Do you think she felt that she could call on you for volunteering all these things because she'd known you as a child?
No. I think she knew that when she called me, my daughter, basically. But I think when she called me, she knew that I had trucks She knew that when she called me, it would be done. In other words, when she was cold, we lit the furnace. If she had a water line break, we fixed it. I didn't let her wait. But there's never one penny changed hands between Lou Tate and the Junker Corporation. I never thought she had any money. I don't know whether she did or not. I don't even know how she existed. In the old days, we used to take food down to her, but that got to the point where we figured that it just didn't look good, you know. Why were we taking her food? She's older than we are, and she's probably got more money than we got. But we'd save some things for her. We'd have something special. And a lot of the neighbors did. But she wouldn't go to anybody's house to eat except your Sue Kendrick. And once in a while, maybe Miss Shingle would get her up to her home.
The people in the community would come to you to get your help about what to do with the cabins because they knew you knew her.
Yeah, most of it was initiated by Mrs. Shingle and Mrs. Kendrick and Miss Tate. But you know, people lived. They lived up there beside her, and they just accepted and really didn't care. The interest wasn't in our neighborhood. It was in these groups around town. They had more interest in it. But once they left there, it was gone. I think that it's really neat that I had the experience and my family had the experience of growing up around Lou Tate. She was just something that you just sit back and think of Lou Tate in the 18th century, you know, everything handmade and weaving. You don't think of that in the 20th century, or at least I don't. But the neat thing is that my daughter had the experience of it, and it ended up a class. And if she don't make an A out of that, it's going to be her fanny. But she is actually probably getting an A out of that. Well, she's going to be on the dean's list on everything. But that one she can slip by. But she said that it's really becoming important now again, the weaving, and all of it started from Miss Tate and basically a neighbor. And she was just a nice person, and nobody would like to see her stuff saved more than me. But I think you have to be practical about a lot of this stuff, and the people are all involved in weaving. A lot of them are not very practical when it comes to the whole sphere of things. But she was a nice gal.
This is the end of my interview with Ed Jungberg Jr., March 21st, 1985.